Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 27th episode of Left of Skeptic. My name is Brittany Land.
And Kayla Moria is back, baby!
Kayla Moria is back from her across-the-country trip. How was it?
It was amazing. Sean and I had so much fun with our friends Connor and Chandler, and it was a long, long time driving, but it was so cool to finally see the forest moon of Endor.
Oh.
Because we were in the California Redwoods.
I only vaguely know that reference. Yeah, no. Sorry.
That's okay. It was...
Different nerddom for me.
Giant, giant trees. Like, we think we have trees here. And then you're out there and you're like, fucking trees.
I've definitely seen pictures of trees where the road is cut so you can drive through them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, pictures of it. I've never actually seen it in real life.
So, there are trees that have fallen down years ago that they cut the trees so that the road can go through. There's only one tree that I know of that we kind of saw the general area of where they had a hole cut through the center that you could drive through.
I mean, it might be the one tree that I just keep seeing pictures of.
But first of all, you have to pay money to drive through the tree.
Oh, that's weird.
And second of all, we were in a Ford Transit 350. We weren't fitting through that tree.
Okay. I don't know what that means.
It's a big van. It's a really big van.
Okay.
So we were traveling through that. We got to see all the like trees that were cut apart, but also they just move the road around the redwoods.
Like, good.
There will be parts that it's just really windy because they're moving them around the trees. It's super cool, but also really sucks if you get motion sick, which both Chan and I do.
Oh, no.
But Chan was a fucking trooper, man. They were a boss. They drove so much. Now, granted, part of that is because you're less likely to get motion sick if you're driving, but also they just rock. It was so cool. Plus, we did one cool thing that I'm going to tell y'all about next week, and we hit a bunch of different states. I went to the Great Salt Lake, and it smells really bad, and it's basically just like the Earth's butthole. Because you know, like, sweat is salty?
Yeah.
Just imagine, like, a salty, sweaty butthole. That's Salt Lake. Not the city. The people in the city were very nice, but the lake was gross.
I don't even have, like, a reference to a salty, sweaty butthole, but I will take your word for it. It sounds gross.
Swassy.
Yeah, swassy.
Some of those listeners out there, you know what I'm talking about. Salty, sweaty, swassy, gross butthole. That's the Great Salt Lake. We've got the greatest lake right there, and I never need to go to the Salt Lake ever again.
No, why would you?
Yeah, not when Lake Superior is right there.
No.
Looking gorgeous. Exactly.
Gorgeous, making us such good beer.
Yep, and I was happy, so happy to come home. I mean, aww, it was a lot of fun, but I'm so happy to come home and to see you because I missed you so much.
Oh, I missed you too. I was hoping that by the time you came home, I would be able to drop off the beer as well as your birthday presents. And I only got one half of it in the mail. So you have a birthday present coming because last Wednesday was your birthday. Hello. Happy birthday.
Aww.
Face to sort of face via Zoom.
You but, didn't have to do that. Just your presence is present enough for me.
Oh, that's adorable.
But speaking of presents, Sean gave me the second half of my birthday present.
What is it?
It was a cameo from K. Trevor Wilson.
I knew that. Now that I'm thinking about it, I knew that because Steve played it for me.
Squirrely Dan said hi to me and wished me a happy birthday and said that his mother-in-law also is going into the field of human resources. So I feel pretty cool about that.
So it's a good field.
It's a good field. I'm feeling pretty great about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a crazy, relaxing, amazing week for me. How was your week?
My week was pretty much the way all of my weeks are, which is pretty busy. I did take pretty much all of Saturday off, though, to sit and do nothing and watched Law and Order SVU.
Hell yeah.
Like, all day. That's all I did. And Steve came home because he went out golfing. And I was like, you know, for a while there, I felt really bad. Like, I was being lazy. And I know that I left all this research that I have to do for the podcast this week until tomorrow because I did nothing today. But then I was like, no, you know what? I work a lot of damn jobs. Mm-hmm. And I get one day to just sit and do nothing. Plus, my carpal tunnel was super acting up. So I'm like, the concept of like typing on a computer anymore. And I'm just like, now. So it worked out pretty good. I'm really excited for stuff coming up. So this was like my chill, one day chill. But like this Saturday is All Pints North, which is like a big brew fest down at Bayfront. And then the next Saturday, we're going down to the cities for my birthday. So, yeah, I've got a full lot of fun stuff coming up. So I was very happy with my chill SVU Saturday.
Sometimes you need a chill, do nothing day. And it's hard when you're as busy as we are to not feel guilty about it. But you got to remember that you earn that shit all the time because you are constantly doing stuff. So you earned a day to do nothing. And nobody, not even yourself, should make you feel guilty about it.
Thank you. Thank you, Kayla. That makes me feel better.
Because you're also like a boss. You're a boss. You do so much.
Heck yeah.
Thank you for handling last week while I was gone.
Yeah.
Thank you for everything. You're amazing. So.
Yeah. Did you get any messages about how people liked the episode? Or didn't like the episode? What'd they think of our solo? I thought it was really weird. I don't want to do that again.
So I got mixed reviews, but not mixed reviews from like some people loving it and some people hating it. Mm-hmm. I got mixed reviews from like people. Like they liked that it was like a solid story section, but they could also tell that we were not in our element because instead of it being a conversation, it was us talking to our walls.
Yep.
But it was also a lot less side tangenty, and some people love the side tangent and some people hate the side tangents, just like every podcast out there that goes on side tangents. That's
true. I was about to get like really offended, and then I remembered that this is something I hear on all of my podcasts. Yep. Is people hating the side tangent.
Oh, I listened to the newest episode and That's Why We Drink. Mm-hmm. And I just was getting so fucking annoyed. They went on so many side tangents on the last episode, and I was just like,
they really did.
Oh my God, just get to the story. And then I was like, oh wait, we do this sometimes. Teehee. Sorry, Em and Christine. I promise not to be angry anymore. Also, while I was listening to that, we were driving through like heavy, heavy, scary smoke from the California wildfires.
Oh, right.
There were points where we were driving through and it looked like everything was in like some sort of sepia toned phone filter, but it was right in front of our face. And the sky was glowing orange and everything was like tan and gray. It was legit scary.
That is just the epitome of the beginning of a Stephen King novel.
I know, it sounds great.
Except for what comes out of the red orange haze.
We were never in any danger of driving into a fire. We looked at the fire map. We were fine. But, you know.
Well, I was thinking monsters.
Oh, okay. Yeah, those are scary.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Remember how we talked about side tangents? This is what we're doing. We should.
All right, well, let's get to the story then. Are you ready?
Yes, but first.
Another side tangent?
Well, no. We should probably tell them that it's another you-centric episode.
Oh, right. Okay.
So, all right. Remember how we talked about side tangents? We're doing that. Let's get to the meat here. Let's talk about what we're doing this week. This week is a Brittany-centric episode. Brittany spent a bunch of time researching an amazing subject that I am very excited to hear about. I know about it, but I don't know a lot, and I'm excited for a little bit of a deep dive. Can't wait. But before we do that, I think we need a word from our sponsor. Brittany, while I was on vacation, I tried a lot of local beers in the different cities we stopped in, and can I tell you two things I learned?
Go for it.
One, I am very glad we have a brewery like Earthrider where all of the beers are consistently good all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And two, if you're traveling around the country right now, it is hot everywhere. So it is important to find a nice, light summer beer to keep you refreshed.
Very true on both counts.
So this week, I am drinking Earthrider's Precious Materials again. This is a Helles Lager, which means that this beer is perfect for fans of rounder, fuller-bodied ales.
And I am drinking the Superior Pale Ale. And if you love a little bit of hop in your easy-drinking beer, this is the way to go. This pale gives you the American hop flavor without being overpowering.
Both of these summery brews, like all Earthrider beers, are made with Lake Superior water and perfect ingredients.
For more information on these beers and the entire Earthrider selection, visit earthrider.beer.
And we're back.
See, we still have that talking at the same time thing. We didn't lose it over the last week and a half.
Yeah, as much as you may have hoped it. It did not go away. Brittany, what are you telling me about this week?
Yeah, so tonight's topic is Glitch in the Matrix.
Yeah. Keanu Reeves.
Keanu Reeves. That's actually how this starts. In 1999, Warner Brothers Studios released the movie The Matrix, starring Keanu Reeves, which depicts a dystopian future in which humanity is unknowingly trapped in a simulated reality, The Matrix, which intelligent machines have created to distract humans while using their bodies as an energy source.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was writing this, I was like, everyone knows what The Matrix is. And then I realized that we actually have some pretty young listeners, and I don't know if they know what The Matrix is.
Also, I'm not young, and I did not see The Matrix in its entirety until I started dating Sean.
What?
Yeah. And I still haven't seen any of the sequels.
I think I've only ever seen one of the sequels, and I don't remember. But I liked The Matrix, and I actually had been thinking about, like, watching it again, and then this topic came up, and I didn't get a chance to watch it, but I'm going to have to now.
All I remember is that scene where the one, like, kind of evil guy is eating steak, and you just can't stop watching him eat steak. So, and then obviously the fall backwards with the bullets. So yeah, that's The Matrix in summary. That's the whole synopsis of the plot for our younger listeners.
Exactly. Guy eats a steak.
And then there are bullets.
Dystopian future. Bullets. Leaning backwards. So in the movie, there's a scene where Keanu Reeves' character, Neo, sees a black cat walk past a doorway. And then the same black cat walks past the doorway again. And he says something like, déjà vu. Which in French means already seen, and it's used to describe the feeling of having already experienced the present situation. And when his companions ask what happened and he explains about the cat, they tell him that what we call déjà vu is actually a glitch in the Matrix. Something went wrong within the simulation that we consider reality, and in the movie they say that this specifically happens when they change something, which indicates that the agents, aka the bad guys, are coming. Since The Matrix release, its scenes and its concepts have become part of our culture, and although over the last 22 years, oh, doesn't that make you so sad, 22 mm-hmm. years, certain things aren't as relevant today as they were back then. Personally, I'm glad that the black pleather duster jacket isn't really like a thing anymore.
Hey!
Others remain, like the concept of the glitch. And glitches aren't just always déjà vu. The term is also used to describe a mistake or an irregularity. And this is what happened to Reddit user ZJU12.
I want a leather black duster.
I know you do. I honestly was 85% concerned about putting that line in there because I thought that's something you actually would want. And then I was like, fuck it. I hate the look. I'm just going to throw it in there. So I guess a little context is in order. My girlfriend and I had been together for about a year at the time, never had big problems. We were both pretty relaxed people, never had a big fight, never had trust issues, the whole shenanigan. which I think they actually mean the whole shebang. But anyway, so one day I was out in front of my apartment building smoking a cigarette. This was before we lived together. And I had seen her the night before. We had a nice dinner, gone out to the bar, then gone to my place, after which she took a taxi home. So as I was standing out in front of my apartment building, she pulls up in a taxi. I wasn't expecting her, but was pleased to see her. I put out my cigarette, smiled, walked up to her, and said something like, "Hey, what are you doing here?" in a very friendly way. She scowls at me and slaps me across my jaw.
What?
Obviously, I'm dumbfounded and at a loss for words, so I kind of just look at her. She never said anything. She just barged past me into the building. I followed her up to my apartment, asking her what was happening the whole way. She goes into my apartment, grabs her bag and some of the stuff she left there, threw a few things at me, breaking a glass or two and knocking a bunch of stuff off of a shelf.
Fucking calm down.
She calls me a pig, says she knows everything and that I've broken her heart. I'm trying to figure out what's going on, obviously, and she stops on her way out when I touch her sleeve. She glares at me again and slaps me. She tells me something like, "I hope I never see you again," and walks out. I followed her into the street and she got in her cab and drove off. The street was pretty empty. This was maybe 8 or 9 a.m. and I watched her drive off. And at this point, I'm at a loss for words. I'm scared and I'm sad. Then, as I'm watching the cab drive away, someone hugs me around the waist from behind. I turn around and it's her. In running clothes, before she was wearing heels and a leather jacket, and I went completely pale. She says, "Hi," in her usual happy-go-lucky tone, and then notices my look and said, "What's wrong?" I spun around, no taxi. It had literally driven away 5 seconds earlier, no way it could have turned in that time, and all the lights were red. I didn't say anything to her, just ran upstairs. Her bag was gone, things were still broken, and my door was wide open. So then I told her. We were momentarily confused. There is no way I could have mixed her up with someone else, and she's an only child. We had security check the cameras, and sure enough, me following a girl up to my apartment, the angles weren't great and the film wasn't a great quality, but it was pretty easy to see me and my face, but hers was always hard to make out. Looked a hell of a lot like her, though, but never got a clear shot. No way was it the same girl. Still creeps me the fuck out, and we don't talk about it.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like doppelgangers in general, whether it's glitch in the matrix or something else. It's no,
not a fan of doppelgangers. Have we had doppelgänger stories yet?
Not yet.
Okay,
well, we had that one listener story in the homegrown episode, but it was like a ghost doppelganger. So either way,
Brianne Marie's.
No, Rena's.
Oh, didn't Brianne Marie see her friend's mom coming home or something?
Oh, we had two doppelganger ghost stories in that episode.
Yeah. Stand corrected. We have had doppelgangers.
Either way, creeps me out every time.
Don't like it. So, a lot of stories about glitches involve different versions of other people, whether they're someone you know or someone you come across. This other version of the person might come off as a doppelganger of sorts, like in Zijoo's 12 story, while others seem more like the cat in the movie The Matrix, the same character repeating itself over and over again. Like in the story that a since-deleted Reddit user posted 3 years ago. I was in London on the tube, seated with my earphones in and just daydreaming. A good-looking girl sat down opposite of me, brunette, beautiful eyes, red coat, and a very distinctive tattoo on her wrist. This is important. Right as the doors closed, an old man gets on and stands beside me. I offer him my seat, which he takes. I stand for about 3 stops, and he gets off, so I sit down. The brunette gets off on the 4th stop, but right before, she gets on the phone and starts speaking Italian, which I understand a little bit of. My stop is still a while away, so with my headphones in, I fall asleep. I wake up, check my watch, and I've been asleep for around 15 to 20 minutes. And at the next stop, an old man gets on next to me. So I stand up, offer him my seat, which he takes. At the following stop, he gets off and a lady comes in. Face exactly like the brunette, except that she was wearing a beige trench coat this time. She takes off her coat before sitting down and I notice that she has the exact same tattoo on her wrist. And so I'm pretty confused and a little freaked out. As we approach the next stop, she stands up and puts on her coat. Crazy thing is, though, that 30 seconds before we get to that stop, she picks up a call and starts speaking in Italian, saying exactly what the other, or the same, lady said before getting off the tube.
I don't like that. You know what would have prevented this? not falling asleep on public transportation. I don't know how people do that. But either way, I don't like... Ooh, no.
It's like, you know that that is a man. Because women wouldn't do that.
Very true.
It's too unsafe.
Exactly.
But the stories that I find the weirdest don't actually involve another, like, character, so to speak. But instead seem to be a different version of yourself.
Ooh.
I remember being pretty young, like 9 or 10, and I was in the car park of a pub in England, near the South End. I remember seeing someone in their teens in the window of the house overlooking the car park. They waved at me, and I felt like I knew them somehow. My parents asked who I was waving at, and I just said, "Some lady up in the window over there." Didn't think much of it. Fast forward 10 years, and I was at my nan's new house. I walked into her room, which I was never allowed to do, going to the window. I then realized that I was in the house looking over that same parking lot and remember that interaction from years before. Then a little girl around 9 or 10 was in said car park. She waved at me and I waved back and I felt like I knew her.
Weird.
So a lot of people attribute the concept of a glitch in the Matrix to the 1999 film The Matrix. But the idea that we are living in a simulated reality is actually a little bit older. Many sources point to a very specific speech that was given in the 1970s as the true origin of the idea that we are living in a simulation. In 1977, Philip K. Dick, who is an American science fiction writer, apparently one of Steve's favorites, whose stories inspired movies such as Blade Runner, Minority Report, and Total Recall, gave a speech at a science fiction festival in Metz, France. The title of the speech, "If you find this world bad, you should see some of the others." He goes on to explain the idea that there could be multiple realities, different worlds, that have essentially split off from our own, likely due to the changing of a single thing in the timeline. Did you ever see that Community episode where they are playing games at Abed and Troy's house and the pizza guy shows up, so they roll the dice and
every time they roll the dice, a different timeline creates.
Yes.
And Abed needs to explain every time that there's a different timeline.
Exactly. So that is essentially what he's saying happens, is that potentially there are thousands of worlds that have sprung off from this reality that we consider reality. So these other worlds then run parallel, touch, or even possibly intersect with the reality that we consider ours, and that this is the idea where deja vu comes from, or even past lives. It's just a bunch of realities mixing and weaving and looping together. Quote, okay. "Though originally I presumed that the differences between these worlds was caused entirely by the subjectivity of the various human viewpoints, it did not take me long to open the question as to whether it may or may not be more than that. That, in fact, plural realities did exist superimposed onto one another like so many film transparencies." He's a hard guy to read.
Yeah, but I'm getting it. Like, it's taking a minute to understand it, but I'm getting it.
Yeah. And in general, we collectively agree upon the shared path or reality. And it's based upon the concept that time is linear. We have a past, we have a present, and we have a future in front of it, and that's how time works. But if there are multiple realities that exist stacked on top of each other, sometimes they touch, sometimes they fully intersect, sometimes they just get really close to each other, then things just get a bit wonky. And then he goes on into the idea that a single being, the programmer, as he calls it, or possibly God, could actually be in charge of what we collectively perceive as reality, or what he calls the Matrix.
Okay.
Quote, "More likely the Matrix world, the one with the true core of being, is determined by the programmer. He or it articulates, prints out, so to speak, the Matrix choice and fuses it with actual substance. The core or essence of reality, that which receives or attains it, and to what degree. That is within the purview of the programmer. This selection and reselection are part of the general creativity of the world building, which seems to be it or his task. a problem, perhaps, which he or it is running, which is to say the process of solving. So essentially, reality as we know it is like the Matrix, and there's some overlordy being who is picking and choosing what happens. And when something goes wrong with the storyline that he's creating, or it's creating, it will make a change. And those changes are where glitches come from.
Okay.
Yeah. But the whole point of this section is that this is a speech that was given in 1977, way before the Matrix and the technology that existed around the late 1990s, which is when the Matrix was created. It's also a really interesting speech. It's 40 minutes long, and that was just like the most basic sum to fit into this particular episode. But I will post the entire speech as a video. And one of the videos, there is a French translator that talks immediately after him, and that one's like an hour and a half long. But I do have one where that guy was cut out, and it's just Philip K. Dick.
Okay.
Okay, so if we are assuming that there are multiple realities that at a time overlap, or as Philip Dick says, get superimposed upon each other, then it's possible that two different yet similar worlds might exist sometime in the same place. User Crowhorse wrote, "This happened in early 2000 when I was working at a juvenile detention center in a small town in Oklahoma as a corrections officer. I was working nights, and at the time, I went to work at about 9 p.m. One night, when I arrived for work, my supervisor looked confused, and he asked me what I was doing there. I said, 'I work tonight.' And he said, 'But they said that you called in a few hours ago saying that you were sick.' I was a bit confused and said it must have been someone else, and maybe they got the message wrong. After everyone showed up for work that night, it was a little bit more weird, but we carried on as usual and assigned everyone to their places for the night. I work in the control room where I usually work. The control room is the center of the prison, which has direct control over the cameras, doors, phones, and everything. After I relieved the guard on duty and settled in for the night, I looked at the message that said I had called in. It said that I had called in at 6:50 and said that I had gotten sick while cleaning up after the storm. There had been a storm the night before, and it was a bit bad, but nothing that I had to go and clean up. It was just truly weird. The supervisor came into the control room at about that time. He was a friend of mine outside of work, and we started talking about it and how odd it was. I decided to call my wife at home and tell her about it while he was sitting there. I picked up the phone and dialed. After two rings, a man picked up the phone and with a raspy voice said, 'Hello?' I didn't know what to say for a few seconds. I looked at the phone to make sure I dialed the right number, and I had. After a few seconds, the person on the phone said, 'Hello?' Again in the same raspy voice. I said, 'Hello? Who is this?'
'This is Taylor. Who is this?'
I'm not very good at sick voices, apparently. The person said, 'My head started spinning because my name is Taylor also. I said in an almost scream, "Where's Anne?" He said,
"Anne's in bed. Who is this?"
I dropped the phone and told my supervisor to ring me out. I had to get home, and I took off towards the door. I could hear Dave pick up the phone behind me and say, "Hello?" Followed soon after by, "What the fuck?" rather loudly.
That's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Could you imagine somebody like just thinking somebody is at home with your partner?
Yeah. No, I cannot even imagine, especially someone pretending to be you.
Yeah, no.
I ran to my car and drove home faster than was legal, my mind racing the entire time. I busted through the door and my wife was sitting watching TV and was shocked at me being home. I asked her who was there and she said that no one was there. After a rather long talk with my wife, I went to call the prison to tell them what was going on, but the phone was dead. I went back to work and when I came in, Dave was acting weird and asked me, "How the hell are you doing this?" He told me that when I left, he picked up the phone and the person on the other end sounded like me. He kind of freaked out and hung up the phone. A minute later, as he said he could see my car leaving the parking lot, he got a call back from home and asked what the fuck was going on. He said that I was a bit irate and I said that I was sick and did not feel like playing these games and was telling him to stop prank calling me and hung up. After convincing him that I had no idea what was going on, we went back to work. Later, I find out that the phone lines from my area had been knocked down the night before, by the storm. This is absolutely the strangest thing that has ever happened to me.
Ugh. No, thank you.
So the next story that I have for you, it doesn't appear to be about like two realities meeting, which is kind of how I see happened in the last one. There are mm-hmm. two realities, one where the storm was so bad, where the guy had to go out and clean up after it, and he got sick in the process. The other is where the storm was bad and it knocked out the phone lines, but not so bad that he had to go clean it up. And they seem yeah. to be touching realities, which is something that Philip K. Dick talked about, and melding together.
Yeah.
This one is instead more about an offshoot. Again, like that episode of Community, where with each roll of the dice, a new timeline is created. And this is from Reddit user Maleficent Wish, and it is entitled, "I Had a Friend Who Died. I was in third grade, and my best friend in the whole world was Madison. Madison and I spent a lot of time together playing Barbies, exploring, reading scary stories. We were inseparable. Our parents weren't friends, but spoke to each other occasionally, well, mostly just while dropping us off. In class, we would pass notes and giggle about everything and anything, and when I tried to host a slumber party, she was the only person who showed up. But that was fine, because we were BFF forever."
Aww, best friends forever, forever.
That is, until she died. We were at my house Aww. Playing in the front yard. Cars would zoom past all the time, going as fast as possible, so we always had to stay out of the street. Well, for some reason, we decided to dash in front of cars, getting to the other side of the road before they would hit us. It was stupid, and we were young, and we had no idea the danger of playing this game. Back and forth we dashed, laughing and screaming, until Maddie didn't make it across. I watched as the truck hit her, remember the screech of the brakes as the truck tried to stop, the crunching of bones as her body went under, hearing my mom rushing out the door screaming, and the sight of her twisted body. It's a sight no one should ever have to see, let alone a child. The funeral was a little later. I think her mom blamed me for her death as she didn't talk to me. For a week, I didn't go to school, and I just stayed in my room crying. But life went on, and I learned to cope with what happened. I eventually made new friends and went on to junior high. A friend admitted one day during lunch that her friend had committed suicide when they were little. It reminded me of my old best friend. When I got home, I went to my mom and asked her about it, if she remembered Maddie. She looked really confused and shook her head, asking me who Maddie was. I couldn't believe it. She had been my best friend. I reminded her, rather meanly, about the accident that I could still so easily remember. She looked even more confused, telling me that nothing like that had ever happened. I got pissed off and I yelled at her. I called a friend who was in high school and had a car, and together we drove out to the cemetery. I couldn't believe how cruel my mom was being. I figured I would just take a picture of the gravestone and show it to my mom. I remembered where it was. I went right to where it was and looked around, trying to find it, but it wasn't there. We searched the whole cemetery, and there was no Madison who had died after 1970, save for a baby that was not even a month old who had died in 2000. I was baffled and decided to go to the good old internet. I went to the local newspaper site and looked through all of the papers the month that she had died. They had archived papers dating back to 1997 and up, and even some months after her death. Nothing, not even an obituary. I couldn't even find her mother's name using Google. Madison simply did not exist. I can't explain it, and my mom said that I've never even mentioned Madison or Maddie before that. The only slumber party I threw, back in fifth grade, a bunch of people showed up. Nothing adds up, and it can't be something that I made up. There are too many years, too many small details that I remember, especially the accident. So, who was Maddie, and why do I have these memories?
What a harsh thing to have to like live with, but then have nobody else recognize.
And then do you want to hear the really weird part?
Yeah.
So one user in the comments said, "If this is true and you posted in the correct section, I guarantee that if I knew Maddie's full name, mother's name, approximate date of birth, and date of death, I would find her. So you should be able to." So the original poster gave that information, everything that they knew. And the commenter found
no fucking way
an article. It is an obituary, but not for Maddie. So the mother's name. So the original poster said, "You're welcome to it. Madison Alicia Stepp, mother Amanda Stepp, no idea middle name or maiden name, date of birth, May 3rd, 1993, date of death, April 6th through the 8-ish, 2002. I can't remember the exact date, but I know it was around that time because it's also my friend Ari's birthday. So then this commenter did a search and found an obituary for a man named Marlon Swinger. And in it, they say that they are survived by Brad and Amanda Stepp of Stafford, Virginia, and their two great-grandchildren, Cassidy Stepp and Madison Stepp.
Weird.
Now, mind you, a woman named Amanda Stepp having a daughter named Madison Stepp.
I mean, they're not super uncommon names.
Possibility, but it is a bit odd considering the ages of the other people listed in the obituary. But what if in this game of a glitch in the matrix, it wasn't someone else's death that you remembered, like Madison? What if instead you remembered your own death?
I can already tell you I'm not going to like this one.
It doesn't make you feel better that the poster's name is Hold the Chimichanga?
A little better, but not enough.
So they said, "I died. I saw it. I lived it. Either it was another world with a version of me that died that I saw, or I'm going crazy, but I died." Okay. We had a pep rally at school, and after it was finished, we had to go back to class. Well, my friend and I were not so into that idea, so we went across the street to Sonic. Across the street, there wasn't a lot of heavy traffic, but if you don't pay attention, you could get hit. Well, I remember walking with him, and he dropped something, so I went across the street first. I just saw a red Tahoe heading right towards me, and I got hit. I remember everything. I remember gasping for air. I remember waking up and sleeping again, and then nothing. All of a sudden, I was back in the stadium again, and the exact same words came out of the principal's mouth. And my friend wanted to go to Sonic, but I was freaking out, was asking him everything. I thought it had to be a dream, so I went with him just to see what would happen. He dropped his stuff again, and this time I waited. To my horror, the same red Tahoe showed up. I told him that I'm going back to school. I ain't dying again.
Nope.
And then I do have one last story. And it's another story by a now deleted user. And this one I like because it's the most glitchy.
Very few things you're going to like because they're glitchy.
Yeah. So about 10 years ago, I was walking my dog in the park, and it was a nice sunny morning, lots of dew on the grass. So wherever you walked, it would leave a path of green grass where the dew was knocked off of the blades. It would be impossible for anyone, or dog, to walk through the grass without leaving such a trail. So Mr. Dog and I were strolling along. He is ahead of me, pissing on bushes, sniffing, etc., when he stops cold. His hackles go up, and he looks across the park, growling. I look to where he is staring, and there is a guy with a dog about 100 yards away, near a large tree, legs moving like he's walking. Thing is, even though his legs were moving, his ground speed didn't seem to match up with the speed of his legs. Kind of like someone moonwalking. Anyhow, okay. I ride it off to perspective or humidity or something and keep walking. The dog, however, won't walk with me and stays rooted to his spot, making this high-pitched whine. I walked back to the dog and looked over to where the guy was, and he's still just about in the same spot, still moving funny. So I decided to check out this odd walking dude. I hooked the dog to the leash, and we started walking across the wet grass to where he was, thinking maybe our dogs will play together. My dog is not happy. He is clinging to my left leg like Velcro as we make our way across the field. As we progress, I notice that it appears that the guy is actually walking away from me, as I don't seem to be gaining on him. And at this point, I don't think there's anything odd until I get to the place where I first saw him, the large tree. I look down at the ground and I see an almost perfect circle, about 10 feet in diameter, of dry, dew-free grass. Thing is, there are no footprints leading to or from this circle. The dog, on the other hand, is flipping his shit and is looking at where we just came from. I looked up and I see the guy isn't ahead of me anymore. He's actually back on the other side of the grassy field, and he is standing just about where I was standing when I first saw him. He has a dog. He's staring at me. He hooks his dog to the leash and starts walking towards us. Needless to say, I freaked out and we cut sideways out of the park and down a populated street. I kept looking back to see if I could see him or his dog again. And after telling this story to a couple friends of mine, they speculated that it was maybe some kind of refraction of light or an optical illusion that gave me the impression that I was seeing the other person, but I was actually just seeing myself reflecting in the mist or fog or something. Anyway, okay. I think I saw a time warp of myself walking my dog one day and I tried to chase it.
What a boring thing to have a time warp of.
I know. Anyway, yeah, that is the end of my glitch in the Matrix stories.
Okay. So, a few thoughts. First of all, I love Keanu Reeves. Second of all, I'm always torn with this stuff because you've got the idea of deja vu. And some of those stories, not all of them, but some of those stories could maybe be explained away by somebody being like super intuitive, almost to a medium-like state where they think they've experienced something because they feel it so hard that they legitimately think it happened. You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. Actually, I... When researching stories for this episode, I literally read over 200. And I know it's over 200 because I found a website that had a whole 100 of them. And then you look at all the other things that I read. So these are the ones that seemed the most glitchy. Because honestly, a lot of them just seemed like a premonition or a ghost. Because one of the stories that I read was about a woman who was like sitting in front of a mirror doing her makeup. And when she was looking in the mirror, she saw a hand appear out of nowhere, slap her nightstand, and then go away. And she was originally like, I would just think it was some sort of a delusion, except for that I heard it as well. And I was like, what kind of glitch in the Matrix would cause a hand to appear out of nowhere and slap a nightstand? That sounds like a ghost. So
for that reason, what you just said and what I said, on the skeptic scale of paranormal, one being normal, five being para, I'm going to give your story a 4.5. And here's why. Because the glitch in the Matrix is not one concept on its own. It is a concept that could be explained by many things from normal to para. It's such an expansive topic. It's actually the first topic that we've done that I think might constitute a deeper dive in like an episode a few months from now. Maybe we can relook into it some more and find some more stories. Like, there's a lot of information here, but there's so many stories that have so many different outcomes. They all encompass the same general theme, which is the glitch in the Matrix. But it could be somebody being super intuitive. It could be ghosts. There could be, like, just a really intuitive person having a dream. There could be scientific explanations. There's too much of an existence and too many possible, legitimately possible explanations for it to not earn a high paranormal rating.
Boom. All right. I also give myself a 4.5.
Hell,
I liked this topic. And
it's a really good topic.
I'm going to read more in depth his speech because it's wacky, I tell ya. I tell you what, it's wacky.
It's also really interesting because everybody thinks of the Matrix as a 90s thing, like a late 90s thing. But like you said, this concept has existed for a long time. It's just the movie with Keanu Reeves is what pushed it into popular culture.
Yes. And there's actually a movie coming out, I don't think it's out yet, called The Glitch in the Matrix, which, let me tell you, is really annoying when you're trying to look up stories and then this brand new movie pops up. But I heard about Philip K. Dick because someone said that the writer or director of this The Glitch in the Matrix movie or documentary was inspired by this particular speech that he gave. So I'm excited to watch that. That sounds interesting.
I think we found our first topic that needs a deeper dive. I really do.
Deep dive.
You did an excellent job, and I love it, and I think there's still so much more we could explore.
Fantastic.
Here. All right, well, I've got a few more thoughts to throw out there, but first I think we need a word from our sponsors, don't you?
So we have to talk about this huge event coming up at the Earthrider Festival grounds.
Oh, yes. The Northbound Caravan Fest. This is going to be awesome.
Heck yeah. On Friday, August 20th and Saturday, August 21st, the festival grounds are going to be exploding with amazing music from the Slamming Doors, the Von Tramps, Turn, 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 and many more.
Live music, food trucks, and great beer. You cannot ask for a better time.
Mm-mm.
Tickets are $30 for a weekend pass or $20 for a day pass. And when we say day, these are going on all day, both days.
All day, yeah.
You can buy them at the gate or you can purchase them ahead of time. Simply visit earthrider.beer's events page and click on tickets right under the title Northbound Caravan Fest 21.
For updates on this event and any future events, follow Earthrider Beer on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
And we're back. All right, so you got your skeptic scale rating for this episode, but your skeptic scale rating for last week's episode, I'm going to give it a 3 as well. The reason being, I wanted more meat.
I know, right?
And then you, at the end of it, you were like, well, I had better stories, but I wanted to wait till you were around. And I'm just in the van listening to the episode being like, no, I want the stories now.
No, Kayla, Kayla, I was going to do a castle story. I told you that. I was like, I want to do a castle story. And I found a couple of them. And the one that I thought was the best had the most ridiculous backstory. And I was like, oh, I need her to be here to laugh with me about this.
All right. All right. Well, you told one hell of a story this week. And I think I'm going to follow that up with one hell of a listener story.
Yeah. I'm just going to sit back.
Are you ready?
Relax. Enjoy this superior pale ale. Tell me some stories.
All right, so I don't know if this will be spooky ambiance or weird in the listener's ears. So in case anybody hears some weird background noise that Brittany cannot edit out this week, there is definitely a thunderstorm starting here. But I don't know how that's going to come through on the mic, so just so we're
hopefully
all aware.
Hopefully spooky.
We received this anonymous listener story titled The Lakeside House. This author's pronouns are she, her.
Okay.
Bear with me as I summarize 130 plus years of history and a 3-year period of oddities the best I can. After 3 years in my lakeside apartment, I can now clearly tell you that ghosts are real and buildings can shine just like Stephen King's Overlook Hotel, albeit not always as sinister. This house didn't try to kill us or anything. Well, not me or my roommate anyway. But those walls had over 125 years of memories embedded in them, and you could feel it in your bones some nights. Where do I even start? The shadow people tickling you in your sleep and putting darkly absurd visions in your mind like a Rolodex of fear that they feed from? Or the tall-hatted man who lurked in my doorway and in the forested backyard? Or the mother and son visions? Or the people watching through the windows from the backyard? I guess before I take you to these things, a little background history on the property wouldn't hurt. This listener did their research.
My kind of listener.
For those of you that don't know, Lakeside is an upper middle class, predominantly white and super gentrified neighborhood in the far east Duluth towards the edge of the city, heading out of town towards Highway 53 to Canada. Duluth was originally Ojibwe land that began to be developed after the Treaty of La Pointe was forged in 1854, which opened the port to fur trade and white settlement. The city of Duluth was platted in 1856 and then incorporated in 1857, but the financial panic of 1857 halted further growth for the next 12 years until Jay Cook came and began to turn Duluth into the, quote, Zenith City, bringing the railway through the port. Lakeside was not incorporated into Duluth until 1893, but prior to that was originally gifted, a.k.a. taken from the Ojibwe, to Francis Dermay, a Michigan militiaman. I hope they intended that to be funny. A Michigan militiaman. Who received the land as bounty for his services in the War of 1812. Lakeside was then bought in 1857 by Hugh McCullough, an associate of Jay Cook and nobleman. Then, in the financial panic of 1857, was sold to George Sargent, who bequeathed this to his widow Mary, who sold it to some more white guys in 1886. They built streetcars and sewer lines and declared it the village of Lakeside, blah, 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 blah. And then in 1893, it was annexed and made part of Duluth. So, this brings me to the year my Lakeside living quarters were built, just 3 years prior to Lakeside becoming part of Duluth, in 1891. The home was originally built as a grocer and drugstore with family quarters on the top floor, and was the first of three-story commercial buildings built in Lakeside. I forget now how I sleuthed out the names or what they were, but the original owners lived there until his wife died mysteriously and he declared himself Postmaster General of Lakeside, moving he and his children to a different location in the area. I found two separate death records for his wife, a year apart in Minnesota and Colorado. It was a common issue back in the day to have error and fraud with death certificates due to the lack of good record keeping. But after the family moved out of the building, it was used as a railway boarding house until the 1970s due to its location on the crossroad by the Lakeside Rail Depot, which is no longer present, and the main streets. So as you can see, there's a ton of history on this land and in this house. Here is what I experienced in the 3 years that I lived there. Let me start by saying that prior to moving in, I would not have considered myself an avid enthusiast of the paranormal, occult, or esoteric. Interest in horror movies, sure, but I had never seen a ghost or planned on being able to eventually hear or feel them. And I had not yet dabbled in witchcraft, but was led directly there by my experiences in this house. When I first moved in with my then boyfriend, it instantly felt heavy, and the lighting was as off-putting as fluorescent lights in a small cubicle. And the house kind of buzzed like that, too. The first thing I did was replace the light bulbs with softer light and eventually learned to get color lights to color code the rooms based on the mood that I wanted that room to have.
Nice.
I always had to have music or sound on. There was a frequency kind of always humming, so low you could feel it more than hear it. I could never be alone in silence there, or else the hum would sometimes put me in a kind of frozen trance. Not afraid, but not comfortable in my own skin either. I could lose hours of my day just standing in my kitchen in what felt like a time warp. Both bedrooms were unsettling, but mine seemed louder. Over time, I started to realize that it was the closet space that was unsettling, and almost seemed like it had energies emanating out of it between midnight and 4 a.m. It began to feel like Grand Central Station in there. Shadow figures swimming in peripheries of your vision, or little jolts of static like someone rubbing their feet on carpet in socks and then poking you in your sleep. It sort of tickled.
Oh.
My now ex-boyfriend started sleeping on the couch soon after moving in because of this. When I learned to ignore the pokes and shadows, they shifted to what I like to call the fear Rolodex. It was like someone flipping through the pages of a magazine in your mind. It would show me the most vivid and bizarre visions in my mind's eye as I drifted to sleep. Things that I could not explain. No show or book or whatever have given me these ideas. They were meant to frighten and to feed. Some were so real that they were visceral, and I could clearly remember them to this day. Others seemed like visions of other people's memories. I began over the years to demand more sleep that they were not permitted to enter my mind. But if I had a bad day or a lot of my own negative energy, I would offer it up to them before bed, and like a parasite eating my own rotten leftovers, the energy flow was definitely emanating out of the closet. So that's where those would come from. I started to understand it as a portal. It came out of the closet, and the one in the back wooded area I am about to tell you about was moving inwards like a vortex. One was a door opening and one was leaving, like a cosmic bus station with dead people filtering through nightly. The backyard was right at the railway crossroads, and there was a wooded area that reminded me of a secret garden. It had a hidden path and tunneling trees, super magical in the day. But at night, I couldn't go into it. One night, I was outside smoking when I swear on my life, a huge shadow figure rose so tall that it blocked out the gas station and streetlights through the trees. It spread its arms like wings or a cloak and must have been huge, at least 9 feet tall. I ran inside right away and closed all the blinds. I never saw him like that again, but it did remind me of the tall-hatted shadow man that I had seen in my doorway before, only a little larger. I believe that these larger shadow figures are like ushers of sorts. They sort of oversee the flow of traffic, so to speak. They are benevolent gatekeepers, and I will get back to them in a bit. The house also didn't seem to favor men, and certainly not aggressive or drunk men. One night, while I was at work, my ex came home wasted, and according to him, a staunch denier of the paranormal, he was choked to the floor upon entering the house. As soon as it let up, he ran outside and called me to ask what I had let into my house with my witch shit.
Oh, nice.
At this point, I was new to the craft and had done no rituals, but I was led to witchcraft while studying the paranormal activity in my apartment and how to protect myself and my family. Mm-hmm. The fact that he was so afraid was further proof to me that this stuff was indeed real. He moved out not long after this incident, and I believe that it was the woman of the house. Perhaps she herself had a drunk partner and wasn't going to hear it anymore? I don't know, but I do know that the other side of this spirited house was the mother and child duo. Based on the death records that I found, and their appearance to three different people, I believe that this was the original lady of the house and perhaps son that had died of illness or injury at a young age. Maybe six at the oldest. My experience started with her. I was going to the bathroom and the door had just been opened to my nosy cat. I was home alone though, so I left the door open. That was when I started to hear a noise coming from the end of the hallway straight ahead. When I looked down the hall, I saw, clear as day, a middle-aged woman in a gray-blue wool dress and apron come flashing down the hall at me and then vanishing. I knew instantly that I had seen a spirit. My stepdaughter had also been found playing in that same hallway that week, seeming to be playing with someone and talking to them. When I asked her who she was talking to, she just calmly said, "The little boy, he's very nice," and rolled her ball towards nothing.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Now, by this point, I have weird vibes coming from three main areas of the house slash yard. I decided to reach out for advice on what I was dealing with and how to deal with it. I ended up talking to my friend who offered his assistance. He had a near-death experience several years prior, and he informed me that when he legally died, he met a little boy who had been his spirit guide since returning to life. He was now able to lucid dream quite well with the help of his guide and felt comfortable trying to help me cleanse my house as best as he could in the astral realm. I was too intrigued to say no. He asked not to be told any details other than to see pictures of the areas of the house that I had been bothering me. He would do three nights of dream work to explore the area and seek advice on what was lingering there. The first two nights, he said it was hard to picture and he got more of a feeling than any visuals. But by the third night, he had a dream that shook me to the core. The dream went like this. Keep in mind, he had no reference point on how these three places fit together in my home, or details about the happenings other than the photos of the hall, the yard, and my closet. He was able to vividly lay out my apartments and where the walls wouldn't have originally been, as well as knowing that there was a kid's bike by my front door. He dreamt of following a young boy dressed in 1900s clothing out of the front door on bikes. He was chasing after the little boy, trying to protect him from something, the boy's mother. He described exactly like the woman in the hall, yelled after them from the front door to be careful, and warned them of a bear behind them. My friend said that he was fearful for the young boy and needed to save him, but knew that he could not fight the bear and would lose his wife and children if he was defeated. Just then, however, he became lucid enough to banish the bear and guide the boy safely back to his mother. After this point, the energy felt tempered a bit and the two were never a problem again, but did later appear in my roommate's dream to warn us of the watchers at the window.
What?
Her dream happened while she was away in Colorado. I was home alone and sitting in the kitchen table smoking a cigarette by the window, and I just had a dreadful feeling of being watched to the point where I had to move away from the window and close the blind. Just then, she messaged me saying she just had a crazy dream and to stay away from the windows. Here was her dream. It was September of 2019, and she was out of town, far away from the house. So this is from her roommate's perspective, who is also she/her.
Well, that was weird.
That was weird. Should I keep going on with the story?
Yeah.
Okay. Ironically, or maybe even planned by some higher being, it was that one Friday the 13th that fell on a full moon. I was in North Dakota, at the time staying in a hotel with my friend while we were on our way to Colorado. That night, I had a dream so realistic and vivid, I can still see it perfectly now. It started out with just me in my apartment, but I remember looking out the windows of the middle room into the backyard, and I saw these beings starting to somewhat zombie walk towards the place. I looked around and saw this tall, dark being that kind of dressed like an old magician. A tux, black cape, and a top hat with white gloves. It didn't seem threatening, but I could see him lift up this electric purple energy thing while all these slow-moving entities moved towards the house. When I looked at them again, I remember that one was staring right at me through the window. She was your average Karen. Short blonde hair, tan pants, and a pink shirt. But her expression was so exaggerated that it was insane. She looked absolutely fucking livid at the sight of me, but the tall man in the top hat kept them all away and they couldn't move past the sidewalk. After that, I saw a very old version of my friend Keith. I hurried to let him inside and I closed the door with my back to it. He doesn't say much or really even seem to notice all of the fuckery happening just on the other side of the wall. The top hat man seemed to be a guide for these souls, but when I tell you that Karen was mad, she was mad. The top hat man kind of smiled at me like that one cat from Sailor Moon, and I woke up. I instantly sent a message to my roommate and told her to stay away from the windows. She then did some kind of protection spell and closed all of the windows. That was the end of the roommate section.
Wow.
Our anonymous listener continues from here. After our time at this house, I truly believe that there are forces there that have existed long before me and will continue long after. There are those that move through and those who will remain. Some were dark people, some had a lot of pain, but others meant no harm if you don't. Here's what I believe is going on at this property. There are at least four permanent spirits who have died on the property. The mystery mom and son, one dark, brooding, sinister-feeling man who I think is from the boarding house, and one or two who have either died of natural causes or suicide. One possibly was a servant of the original family. They are bound to the house for some reason, even though they do not fully understand, but it is like a magnetic force tying them there. Then there are the watchers, ushers, and the shadow people. By the third year, the portal in my room seemed to have been successfully decommissioned and no longer bothered me. But the one in the backwoods was left to the ushers. We built a perimeter of protection, energetically barricading them from entering if they were not OGs. But the proximity to the crossroads, the bluestone basement, and dense ley lines in the area, plus its indigenous land roots, undoubtedly made this house a superconductor. We never asked them to leave. Only peace offerings and protections were done. This history extends far beyond the 3 years that I shared its walls. I never felt like it was very polite of me to demand they leave. Just leave me alone.
Right.
I have recently moved out, and honestly, sometimes I miss the way it vibrated. It is alive.
That was such a good story. Like, I didn't even want to interject because it was so well thought out, everything that I would have said.
Yes. This listener she brought did up their later. Research.
Yes.
Thank you,
yes.
Whoever you are, for such an amazing story. Holy cow.
So good.
Whew. And now I'm curious about which house it is in Lakeside.
I know. At the beginning when she was giving clues, I was like, I don't know Lakeside that well, so.
For our non-Duluth listeners, this area is a very nice area, but super old.
Very old, yep. I mean, Duluth in general is very old.
Duluth in general is very old, but these houses all, for the most part, all look very old. And there'll be some that have obviously been kept up to date, and it'll be like five really up-to-date houses and then one that's still nice, but you can tell is still kind of eh. And I kind of wonder if it's one of those houses that's kind of eh. It gives you a weird vibe when you drive by.
Right.
Whew. That was an amazing story. If you so have good. A listener story you would like to submit, you can do so on our website, www.leftofskeptic.com, and you can click on the listeners tab, or you can email us directly, leftofskeptic@gmail.com. We just ask that you please include your pronouns. You can choose to include your name or remain anonymous like this listener did.
You can also follow us on social media. We are on Twitter and Instagram at Left of Skeptic and on Facebook at Left of Skeptic Podcast.
Well, this was a weird vibing spooky Wednesday. Thunderstorms, yeah. Long stories, glitches in matrices.
It is funny. I'm not sure how much of it is going to get edited in, but Kayla was in the middle of the listener story when a thunder crack knocked out her internet. So this is actually like an hour later.
So if the vibe seems a little different for those last couple of paragraphs, that's why.
That's why. It's an hour later. I had already started making dinner. And then Kayla's like, the internet's back. I'm like, okay.
Go, 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 go. Well, thank you all for joining us.
Go, before it happens again.
Thank you all for joining us this spooky Wednesday. We love you very much, and we will see you next week.
Sounds good. Okay. Okay,
bye.
The Left of Skeptic podcast is written and hosted by Kayla Moria and Brittany Lind. This week's episode is edited by me, Brittany Lind. The Left of Skeptic music is by Dave Melling and Emily Havoc, and our artwork is by Al LeBlanc. Okay, bye!
Oh, good.
But they were still whiny bitches when we got home.
Oh, I bet.
Why did you leave me?
Meow.
Meow. Why?
The fizz, so you've got the fizz gigs of the just following you around the house. Like, we're not going to leave again. You're fine. And then you've got Wicket, who is downstairs. We're upstairs. Wicket is downstairs going, meow, meow, meow. We're like, we're upstairs. Just fucking come up here.
You're so good at impersonating your cats. That's like dead on.
I hear it all the damn time. They're bitches.
If I have the time and the energy, I'm going to put that at the end of the episode.